Chapter 15. Frank smoked a cigarette standing atop Malinta Hill on Corregidor Island and strained to see the Bataan Peninsula across the 4 miles of the North Channel. Black smoke shrouded the distant peninsula. He wondered how his squad had fared since he'd left 3 weeks ago. He could hardly picture their faces now. Captain Yates worked in intelligence, so Frank heard the reports. The Japanese continued to push, taking full advantage of the Allied supply problem. They'd broken through here and there, wreaking havoc all along the lines. Even soldiers well back from the front lines couldn't relax at night. The Japanese infiltrated sections of the line nightly, sometimes sneaking for miles before slitting someone's throat while they slept. From the sounds of it, the only thing that had changed was the Allies' position and their ever-worsening supply problem. By all accounts, the situation on Bataan seemed hopeless. Soon after arriving on Corregidor, Frank had seen General MacArthur as he scanned the distant peninsula through binoculars. Khaki-clad officers surrounded him and nervously watched the skies for Japanese bombers and fighters. One dark night in mid-March, Frank heard that MacArthur had boarded a PT boat and slipped off the island. When the regular soldiers and Marines heard about it, they had been incensed. But Frank knew he'd likely been ordered to leave. He only wished he could have gone with him. Before MacArthur left, there'd been little doubt about the final outcome of the battle, but his leaving really hammered it home. Frank could feel the shift almost immediately. He could feel the hopelessness permeate those left behind. Frank sighed and thought, "Nearly a month's gone by since then, and we're still here." Yates sidled up beside Frank and looked at the clear skies. "Should expect a barrage any minute now." Frank took a drag on his cigarette and blew smoke out the side of his mouth. "Little early, isn't it? Normally the Japanese sent a barrage out their way around 1800 every day, as though letting them know they hadn't forgotten about them." Yates sighed, then pursed his lips. "We just got the word. General King surrendered on Bataan." Frank looked stunned. He expected it, but finally hearing it shook him to the core. Jesus, how many men? "Impossible to know for sure, but at least 12,000 Americans and 5 times as many Filipinos." "Seems impossible." He clenched his teeth and snubbed out the cigarette. "The Nips won't be kind to them." "You're probably right. From what we've heard from our Chinese allies, they don't respect POWs. "Any idea about my unit?" Yates shook his head. "No. Everything's a mess over there. Mixed units, lost units. You know that better than anybody."
"What's that mean for us?"
"General Wainwright doesn't have plans to surrender anytime soon. This place is a fortress. They'll have a hell of a time taking it."
"All they have to do is starve us out."
"They don't have time for that. Besides, it's not their style. As long as we're here, they can't access Manila Bay. Now that King surrendered, they'll aim every artillery piece they've got over there straight at us. They'll bomb and strafe us, too, and we don't have an endless supply of munitions we can shoot back at them. Then they'll send an amphibious force across and try to take it from us. Same thing we'd do if things were reversed. Wainwright's holding back ammo for that occasion. We've got enough small arms munitions to last a while, and we can still wreak havoc on their bombers and fighters. We'll be a tough nut to crack." Yates pointed east and said, "The Marines are already strengthening the prepared defensive positions overlooking the beaches at North Point and Cavalry Point. There's only a few landing spots, and they're all small. Defenders have the advantage here."
"Yeah, but for how long?"
Yates looked at his scuffed boots, then back across the straits. "Relief's not coming. It never was." Frank looked sideways at him. He'd known that in his gut for a long time, but Yates had continued to spout his optimistic bullshit about a relief force. Frank knew it was bullshit, but to hear Yates finally admit it shook him. "No use lying about it any longer. No one on this rock believes it anymore if they ever did," Yates said. "I understand you were doing it for morale, but I never believed it," Frank confirmed. Yates sighed and said, "Roosevelt told MacArthur months ago to hold out as long as possible. Every day we hold is another day for the country to get in gear and start rebuilding the Navy. But no one expected us to hold on forever. The attack on Pearl Harbor sealed our fates. There's just not enough ships. Even your fate, sir? Frank had become close with Yates over the past few weeks and felt he could talk candidly with him. Yates wasn't regular Army. In fact, Frank didn't really know what branch he belonged to. He seemed more like a civilian than a soldier, but Frank knew better than to ask him about such things. Yates finally answered, "We'll see." He looked squarely at Frank. "If they order me off here, and they're able to get a submarine in, I'll put in a good word for you, Frank." Frank gave him a sideways grin, then shook his head. "I'm a corporal. Don't sweat it, sir. I can take care of myself. Us Coopers have been doing so for a while now." "You got siblings, Frank?" Frank looked wistfully toward the horizon. They'd never really talked about their families with one another. "A younger brother," he said. Yates said, "It's got to be rough on your family, not knowing if you're alive or dead." "They know I'm not dead. No telegram." "Well, I suppose that's true." Yates squinted at the blowing black smoke wafting across the straits. "They have no idea what's going on over here. Not really." "News outlets. They're still reporting, aren't they?" "Highly censored, but technically, yes. But they don't know how it really is." Frank shook his head slowly, thinking about all the dirty fighting and the awful killing he'd seen and done. He said, "They wouldn't believe it if we told them. They're civilians. They're not ready for that sort of thing. That's why we're here and not them." "I suppose you're right. If they knew about the carnage, the killing and maiming, this war would end tomorrow. They'd see it for what it is, pure insanity." Frank didn't respond. Yates got this way sometimes. Yates finally asked, "Are you worried about your brother? Is he in the service?" Frank thought of his aloof brother. "His name's Clyde. He married a society gal, a real looker. We're from working stock. My dad works on the wharf in Seattle. Her father's some bigwig businessman. Clyde's got his hands full with her, that's for sure. Abigail. She's sweet, but her family." He shook his head with disdain. "After the wedding, I couldn't wait to ship out here just to get away from their bullshit." He smiled, remembering the opulent wedding with the stodgy guests on one side and his people on the other. "Clyde was dead set against us entering the war in Europe, but I suppose he's changed his tune by now. He kicked a chunk of concrete off the lip of the walkway they stood upon, then said, 'I can't really imagine him in uniform. He's kind of a pain in the ass, truth be told.'" "Well, Uncle Sam needs every pain in the ass they can get their hands on." "The country must be something to see right now. Must be bustling." He looked off wistfully, thinking about home. Yates nodded sagely. "If nothing else, this'll pull us from the last grips of the Depression." Frank looked at him as though he'd lost his mind. "Takes an officer to think about that sort of thing at a time like this." "I've got a degree in economics," Yates shrugged. "It just comes naturally." A distant boom made them look toward the peninsula again. Arcs of white and yellow fire bands reached skyward. Yates tapped Frank's shoulder. "Time to get below." Frank took one last look at the sky, then turned to follow Yates into the Malinta tunnel system. "Goodbye, sunshine," he mumbled. Private First Class Sean Cooper felt delirious with joy. He'd never met anyone like Ilsa. At her urging and his discretion, he'd kept their affair private, but anyone who knew him noticed an obvious change. He glowed and walked around as though half drunk. He'd taken every opportunity to swap out duties so he could meet Ilsa as often as possible in the evenings. It only amounted to a few times so far, but what glorious times they turned out to be. Before her, he'd had sex one other time, but that awkward, bordering on embarrassing experience with Natalie Harper in the back of his high school friend's sedan couldn't compare with his time with Ilsa. Making love to Ilsa consumed all five of his senses at once.
He felt as though he'd stumbled onto the world's greatest secret, and he had trouble keeping it to himself. He strolled past his squad leader, Sergeant Mayhew. Sean smiled broadly and said ebulliently, "Good afternoon, Sergeant." Sergeant Mayhew scowled and pulled him aside. "All right, that's it. Spill it, Cooper."
"Spill what, Sergeant?"
"You're walking around with your head in the clouds. More than usual, I mean. What's going on? You look like you're getting laid." "But that can't be right, because there's a strict army policy against it here in beautiful Panama." Sean's face turned red despite his best efforts. He stiffened and stood at rigid attention, suddenly worried. Mayhew was right. They'd been warned not to become involved with the local women. He told himself he wasn't really breaking the rules because Ilsa wasn't a local, but he doubted the sergeant would see it that way. He'd thought about this moment, thought about what they'd do to him if they found out. He'd most likely be reprimanded, given shit duty, maybe bust him back to Buck Private. He decided that dating Ilsa would be worth every bit of punishment he received, short of being kicked from the airborne. For a moment, he thought about lying, but if the sergeant found out the truth, and Mayhew had a reputation for doing just that, it would be much worse for him. They'd kicked men from the airborne for much less. "It's true, Sergeant. I've met a woman and I'm seeing her." Mayhew scowled, and Sean quickly added, "But she's not a local. I mean, she's not Panamanian."
"You know the rules about the women over here as well as I do. They're off limits, damn it."
"But she's not a local. She's Dutch."
"I don't care if it's Betty Grable. She's off limits."
"Look, Cooper, you put me in a bind. I've got to report this sort of thing to command."
Sean gulped and stammered, I guess you've got to do what you got to do, Sergeant."
Sean wanted to argue more, but he'd already pushed too far, and privates don't argue with sergeants. It would only make things worse.
"Dutch, you say?"
Sean nodded.
"You're sure about that?"
Sean eyeballed Mayhew for a moment and said,
"Yes, Sergeant. That's what she told me."
Mayhew pulled out a notebook and a nub of a pencil. He licked the end of the lead and asked,
"What's her name?"
Sean hesitated. Would she get in trouble?
Why'd he need her name?
He hadn't learned too much about her family back in the Netherlands. They'd mostly just screwed and laughed together. Would they deport her back to an enemy-occupied country? Mayhew saw the alarm on his face. He crossed his arms and leaned in so no one else would hear.
"Look, kid, I need her name so I can pass it up the line. The brass is going to want to check her out. It's standard procedure ever since the war, so spill it."
"Ilsa." Mayhew wrote it down and asked,
"What's her last name?"
Sean realized he didn't know it. They'd been so enamored exploring each other's bodies that he'd never asked.
I don't know.
Mayhew guffawed.
"Jesus, Cooper, you're a real piece of work. I hope she knows how lucky she is finding such a diligent man like you."
Mayhew studied him, and Sean felt his ears burning in embarrassment.
"Look, kid, bring her in. They'll check her papers, and that'll be it. Hell, they might even let you keep seeing her."
The thought of breaking things off with her hadn't occurred to him until that moment. He felt lightheaded. He thought about the last time they'd made love. It had been in the hammock on her porch, surrounded by exotic plants that threatened to take over the entire space. They'd laughed as they struggled passionately in the cocoon-like confines. Would that be the last time? God, he hoped not. He couldn't imagine not seeing her again. The thought made him ill.
"You gonna be all right, soldier? You don't look too good."
I'll see about getting her papers to you, Sergeant," he stammered.
"See that you do."
Sergeant Mayhew watched PFC Sean Cooper leave. He shook his head and smiled.
"That young man's head is in the clouds," he murmured.
He considered keeping the information to himself. The kid had done nothing to irritate him beyond the normal stuff. But he thought it prudent to let Lieutenant Hennessy decide. He found Lieutenant Hennessy in his office. He told him about Sean's admission. He figured Hennessy would simply wave it off, but instead he acted intrigued.
"Dutch, huh? And he doesn't know her last name.
That seems odd to me,"
Maybe she's trying to hide something. Mayhew said, I think the kid's just getting his first taste of a real woman and didn't think to ask, sir. Maybe, but G2 just gave us a briefing about this very thing a few days ago. You know how they are, though. They suspect Nazi spies are hiding behind every bush. I think they're just bored and looking for something to do. He pulled out a pen and wrote Sean's name and the rest of the pertinent information. I'll give it to G2. What do you think they'll do, sir? Cooper's a good kid. Never had an issue with him. I'd hate to see this hurt his career. They'll put a tail on him, and if they see anything suspicious, they'll bring them both in. A tail? Isn't that an overreaction, sir? He said he'd get her papers and bring them in for us. They're taking this sort of thing seriously. Probably shouldn't tell you this, but they've had some problems recently, so they're tightening things up a bit. Personally, I just think they like playing spy games. Should I warn Cooper? This feels wrong, like I'm betraying him. No, don't warn him. I know he's one of our own, but let's let these guys do their jobs. If she checks out, that'll be the end of it. Maybe remind the rest of the men to keep their pants buttoned up, though. Hopefully, we'll ship out of here soon and won't have to deal with this kind of horseshit anymore. Ilsa knew she should break it off with a handsome American paratrooper. Even before Carlos berated her for it, she knew. He didn't have access to any useful information. He offered her nothing, but she couldn't stop thinking about him. At first, he'd been a much-needed distraction from the stress of her life. But the more time she spent with him, the more times she made love with him, the more times she heard his genuine laughter, the deeper her feelings grew. She'd never been shy about sex. She enjoyed it immensely, but usually grew bored quickly when the men inevitably started treating her like some kind of trophy. She'd only been with Sean a little over 2 weeks, but every time she saw him, she felt something deep inside herself soften. No man had ever done that to her. Not even Hans. She found an open chair in a spot of shade and looked out over the sparkling waters of the Panama Canal. Panama looked far different from Berlin. She wondered if she'd ever see her homeland again. What would become of her parents, her siblings? The cold winter weather there would just be relinquishing its icy grip. Would she enjoy a spring day in her homeland ever again? She put her worries aside as she saw a young American paratrooper approaching. Various other American troops occupied the Panama Canal Zone, but she could always pick out the paratroopers by their confident strides. Her heart rate increased as Sean approached their agreed-upon meeting spot. She checked her watch. He was late. He hadn't seen her yet, and she studied his lithe body and boyish features. She bit her lower lip and thought for the 100th time that she should end this relationship before it spiraled out of control. I don't have time for this, she chided herself. But she knew she wouldn't end it, at least not yet. His face lit up when he noticed her sitting in the corner. She smiled. Sean whipped off his cap with the silver airborne patch and smoothed his short blonde hair.
Sean Cooper, I thought perhaps you'd forgotten about me.
He stood there, working his hat between his fingers nervously. No chance of that, Miss Ilsa, he said awkwardly. Ilsa immediately picked up on his nervousness. She lowered her voice.
What's wrong, Sean? What's happened? You look like you ate rotten fish.
Sean shook his head and smiled. No, I'm fine. Just tired, I guess. She gestured for him to sit.
You poor dear. Sit down. There's room in the shade.
He sat, but instead of his normal warm greeting, he seemed stiff. Something clearly bothered him.
What's wrong?
She reached beneath the table and touched his knee. My sergeant found out about us, he said. He lowered his head as though they had caught him stealing.
Is that a bad thing? I don't understand.
Fraternizing is strictly off limits to us. This whole thing, he motioned between them, is against regulations. She pulled her hand back and sat upright.
But that's ridiculous. Are you in trouble? I can't imagine such a thing.
Well, it's true. I knew it, of course, but I don't care. I can't help the way I feel about you. She felt genuine joy at his words, and she reached across the table and grasped his hand.
Oh, Sean, I feel the same way.
She'd never said something so intimate to a man, nor so true, she realized. She stared into his eyes, and she could see her joy reflected there.
What do we need to do? We'll just keep it a secret.
They want to run a security check on you. They want to see your papers. Once they confirm you're not some kind of a threat, Sergeant Mayhew said they might let us continue seeing each other. We wouldn't have to hide then. Her mind churned. Her papers would tell them she wasn't Dutch, but German. She'd been trying unsuccessfully for months now to have fakes made. No one in Panama did such things, at least no one she'd found. She couldn't keep the tear from forming in the corner of her eye. She knew what she had to do, and she abhorred the thought of it. Sean asked,
"What's wrong? It's just a simple check, then we can get on with things."
Her mind raced, trying to come up with a sufficient lie. She hated herself at that moment. She didn't want to lie to this man, ever.
"It's not that simple, Sean," she finally uttered.
Confusion swept across his face.
"But of course it is. What's the trouble?"
When she didn't respond right away, he said, "By the way, the sergeant asked for your full name, and I realized you never told me your last name. I never thought about it before, but he thought it strange. And I guess I do, too." She looked into his expectant eyes. Lying would only make her seem guilty once he learned her real name.
"Engel,"
she finally said. He repeated the name as though testing it out.
"Ilse Engel. That's lovely. It sounds like angel."
She smiled sadly.
"It means angel in German."
"Are your ancestors from Germany?
That must be tough for you."
She wiped the tear threatening to stream down her cheek. She stood up abruptly.
"This is over,"
she said with venom she did not feel. She drew the attention of everyone in the place. The stunned look on his face nearly made her crumble, but she stayed firm. She lifted her chin, straightened her back, and scowled down at him.
"Do not contact me ever again! Do you understand?"
She pushed her chair back and strode quickly across the patio, trying unsuccessfully not to look at him one last time. She shoved her feelings into the dark recesses of her mind, allowing her training to take over. She'd need to find a new residence and perhaps move to a nearby town off the water. She'd need to be extra careful for the next few weeks. Keep a low profile. She already knew Nazis sought her out, but now she might have gotten the attention of the Americans, too.
"Carlos was right," she fumed to herself.
Her mind occupied with her next move, she didn't notice the three men standing near the stairs. As she descended, she fought the urge not to look back as she heard Sean say,
"Ilse! Ilse, wait!"
The three men suddenly surrounded her and squeezed her arms tightly to her sides and shuffled her toward a waiting sedan. In perfect German, she spat,
"Lasst mich los, ihr Gestapo Arschlöcher!"
As she struggled, she heard Sean yelling from the patio. They gripped her harder and kept pushing her along. She didn't struggle hard at first, allowing them to continue with token resistance, what they'd expect from a frail woman. When she felt their grips ease to push her into the back seat of the sedan, she focused her strength and broke one arm free. With speed and accuracy, she punched the man on her right in the groin. He dropped with a grunt, clutching his balls. She spun, but before she could strike again, the other two backed away quickly, pulled pistols, and aimed them at her chest.
"Get in the car, Fraulein,"
the taller of the two said with barely disguised hatred. Sean sat utterly stunned and unable to process what had just happened. He thought for a moment that she must be joking, but the deadly seriousness he'd heard in her voice and the way she stormed out of the place made him wonder. He could barely react when he saw three strange men dressed in ordinary street clothes close in on her as she exited. They surrounded her aggressively and held her arms as though abducting her. He finally got his legs beneath him and rushed down the stairs.
"Hey, let her go! What do you think you're doing?"
A heavy body slammed into his left side and tackled him to the ground, causing him to lose his wind. As he struggled and fought to breathe, his assailant sprang off him and pulled a pistol. He aimed it at his head and said, "Don't move." Sean spit dirt and held out his hands. He saw Ilsa lash out at her captors. She dropped one man with a brutal and expertly aimed punch to the groin, but the other simply stepped back, drew pistols, and trained them on her. He watched as they made her enter the back of the car. The wounded man stumbled his way to the front seat. Sean's assailant yelled, "Get up! Don't try anything! I won't hesitate to shoot, traitor!" Sean heard the word but couldn't process anything. Traitor? He got his wind back and struggled to his feet. With a man close behind, prodding him forward, he went to the car and entered the back seat. He slid in beside Ilsa and his assailant slid in beside him, pistol aimed carefully at his chest. "Are you all right?" he asked Ilsa. The man beside him pushed the pistol into his side hard, making Sean wince. "Shut up!" He shut the door and said, "All right, let's go." The car lurched forward and sped along the narrow street. Rage consumed Sean. He wanted to punch the son of a bitch beside him until he died. But he yelled, "What the fuck's happening? Who are—" A man in the front seat whirled and planted the barrel of his pistol against Sean's forehead. "Shut the fuck up!" Sean tried to swallow, but he didn't have enough spit. He got control of himself and closed his eyes. He opened them again, stared the man in the eye, and nodded. The barrel pulled away, and Sean fought the urge to touch the indentation he'd left. Ilsa seethed. "You Nazi pigs! You rot in hell!" The gunman refocused his attention on her. He sneered. "English now? What happened to your German, Fraulein?" She scowled at him but didn't say more. He lowered his voice and said, "We'll sort this out back at the compound." Sean wanted to scream, but he'd seen the look in his captor's eyes. They meant business. He had no doubt they'd make good on their threats. Ilsa called them Nazis. The thought turned his blood cold. What would Nazis want with her? And why had they called him a traitor? Nothing made sense. A few minutes later, his fears abated. They drove to a side gate entrance of the army base. They stopped, and the men up front presented the armed MP with their IDs. Sean glanced over at Ilsa, who'd been stoically ignoring him the entire drive. Now he saw relief on her face as well. Up to that moment, she'd thought these men Nazis? Confusion and questions clouded his mind. The guard waved them past and they wound their way through the army base until they pulled up to a small building that Sean had never noticed before. If he had seen it, he would have assumed it some kind of maintenance shack. The only thing setting it apart were multiple tall radio antennas sticking from the tar paper roof. Sean waited as the men exited the vehicle, leaving him alone for a moment with Ilsa. He beseeched her. "What's going on? Nazis? You thought they were Nazis?" She looked at him, and the sadness in her eyes broke his heart.
"I'm so sorry, Sean. I never—"
"No talking!" the man who tackled Sean barked. "Both of you, get out slowly!"
Ilsa had to scoot her way across the seat, unable to use her handcuffed hands. Sean exited the other side and held up his hands when he saw pistols drawn. Two men closed on him, grasped his arms, and pushed him into the building. He glanced behind him and saw Ilsa getting similar treatment. He barely held back the panic when they thrust a burlap sack over his head. It smelled like oil and grass, and his eyes burned from the bits of dust and cloth. He closed his eyes and told himself to calm down. This would be over soon, one way or the other. After going down a few flights of stairs, he heard a door unlatch. They thrust him through, forced him to sit in a chair, tied his feet and arms to the chair, then removed the burlap sack. He'd been given a sip of water, poured by one of the men who'd abducted him. He tried to ask questions, but only got stony silence for his efforts. Then they'd left him alone. The lights went out, and he sat in complete darkness. The only sounds came from other doors and the occasional clomping as someone walked nearby or overhead. He finally fell asleep. When he woke, had no sense of time. He could have been there a few hours or an entire week. By the pressure coming from his bladder, he assumed at least 6 or 7 hours. He fought the panic welling in his belly. Had they forgotten him? Would he die down here in the dark? Where was Ilsa? The light suddenly turned on, and he yelled out in astonished agony at the brightness. He slowly opened his eyes. Nothing in the room had changed. The door opened, and a man he didn't recognize entered. He smiled, but it didn't quite reach his eyes. He pulled a chair and sat on it backward, facing Sean.
"How'd you sleep?"
he asked cheerily. Sean squinted but didn't reply. He had the urge to rip the man's throat out.
"Probably not too well, I'm guessing."
When Sean didn't respond, the man changed the subject.
"You're in a lot of trouble, soldier. Do you know that?"
Sean didn't know what to think, but he kept his mouth shut.
"Your Nazi girlfriend is singing like a canary. No use trying to protect her anymore. We know all about the shipment coming in.
We know everything." He smiled sardonically.
"So why don't you make this easier on yourself and just spill it? They might even put you in Leavenworth instead of up against a wall. What do you say, pal?"
he asked like an old friend. Sean fought to keep from screaming. He finally said, as calmly as possible,
"I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I want to talk to my commanding officer, Lieutenant Hennessy."
"Oh, they've been informed of your treachery. They've turned you over to us."
Hearing it sent fear shooting through him, but he kept calm and asked,
"And who would that be? You're not military, yet you're on a military base and have military ID. How long did it take to turn you, Private? That pussy must be something special, huh? Make you betray your country that quick. But maybe this has been going on longer than we thought. Is that it?"
Sean knew the son of a bitch was trying to make him angry, but hearing such vile things from him worked.
"If you've hurt her, I'll find a way to make you pay."
He sneered and laughed.
"So romantic. So,"
Sean interrupted him.
"I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I haven't betrayed my country, for God's sake. I knew it was against regulations, but I fell for a beautiful woman. A woman I assume you think's a spy. Is that right?"
He didn't let the man answer.
"Then why the hell she cussed you when she thought you were Nazis? She called you Nazi pigs and hoped you rotted in hell. I second that, but it doesn't sound like a Nazi spy to me."
The man stood up quickly and shoved the chair into Sean's shins. He grimaced, but didn't call out, not wanting to give him the satisfaction. He paced a few times, then turned and said with an evil grin,
"Perhaps 24 hours in the dark will change your tune."
He went to the door, and just before he closed it, Sean said,
"I've got to piss." "No one's stopping you, traitor."
He shut the door and the lights went out.
"Fuck you!"
Sean exploded. But the only answer was silence and darkness.